This segment of the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast is sponsored in part by Dark Horse Tackle. Go to darkhorsetackle.com and use promo code BKB5 to save an extra $5 when you build your own box. Douglas Outdoors, serious rods for serious anglers. Norsk Lithium. The lithium kayak battery you need is just a click away. Go to norsklithium.com. Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all three national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com and use promo code BKB5 to save 5% on your next online purchase.
What is going on, everyone? I hope you are having a great day. Welcome to the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast. This is the real life with your boy Armando. I am actually trying to put this on Instagram Live. I think I failed at it. So let me see if I can. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it on Instagram today. So anyways, technology escapes me sometimes, guys. Welcome once again to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Sorry for keeping you waiting. Wolf of Walmart, crickets. Yes, I'm sorry. Sorry we're late. What do you say? I feel alone, empty room. God, we got groupies here today. Anyways, we got a great episode for you today. I got Andrew Hayes, host of the Tackle Talk podcast. Definitely one of my favorite bass fishing podcasts. And if you're not familiar with Tackle Talk podcast, I strongly suggest you follow him on social media and listen to his podcast, which I'm sure it's on every streaming platform out there. It is by far one of the best podcasts out there when it comes to bass fishing. Very entertaining and very informative. So that being said, I want to start off with a little story, and I'm going to mention this, even though I am probably going to get trolled and made fun of and ridiculed and clowned on social media. And a lot of people that you that listen on the podcast, and that is fine. I understand how the internet works. However, I am going to put myself very vulnerable here and tell you a story because I want people to avoid the same mistake that I just made. And it could be a very costly mistake. And here's the thing. If you've listened to my podcast recently, I'm starting to get into bow hunting. I bought my first compound, Matthews Mission MXR. I think it's a great bow, but again, this is the first bow I owned, so I'm not going to come here and talk about how great it is and all that because I don't know. I think it's a great bow. It looks like a great bow, feels like a great bow. Reviews say it's a great bow. YouTube content creators say it's a great bow. So anyways, that's the one I got. That's the one that was recommended to me. I did not know, and this is straight out of ignorance. I do my research on everything that I put my head into doing, and I guess I didn't ask the right questions. I never asked how to make sure you don't break your bow. And some of you that bow hunting and are experts in compound bow know where I'm going with this already. But for anybody, this applies not just to bow hunting. If you're just starting to get into fishing, kayak fishing, if you're buying a new reel, electronics, we always ask how to use it, what to get the best of it. The right question you should be asking, aside from all those ones, those are all great questions, is what can I do to make sure I don't break it? Again, this applies not just to bow, to anything that you buy, purchase cars, whatever you're into. If you're new to this, how to take care of that equipment. So I did not know that you are not supposed to do what is referred to as a dry fire, which basically you pull on the bow and shoot it without a bow. I didn't know that. I bought the bow. I was trying it. And I was like, oh, let me, get a feel for it. I had it set up for 60 pounds. And I had the trigger with it, and I released the trigger just to get a more feel for it. And I actually tore that bow up. Strings, the module, the limbs cracked, it is completely destroyed, and now I'm trying to see if I can get it warrantied. The archery that's helping me out, it's doing their best. But those kind of dry fires are not covered by warranty. So I tell you this again because I'm an idiot and I don't want you to be an idiot. So anyways, with that, let's bring a smarter person than me when it comes to bass fishing, Mr. Andrew Hayes. How's it going, buddy?
Man, that story hurts, bud.
Dude.
Oh,
no. When he told me, because I thought it was just a string, right? Broke the string. I didn't spend 10 minutes with it. I bought it, drove home, took it back. Like, as soon as that happened, I was like, no, I'm driving right back to the place, which is like 15 minutes from where I live. When he told me, no, you broke this broke that, I literally wanted to cry. There was like 20 people out there. Because it's an archery and a range where you get, so everybody's just looking at me, loneliest man in the world. Like, I literally wanted to cry.
Yeah, you're lucky you didn't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Did the string jump off and everything too?
In my face. It didn't hurt me, but
Yeah.
I felt something burning. I'm like, what the?
And then, that's scary, dude. Oh, well, I mean, I hope they get it warrantied. I don't know how that works.
I don't know. If not, well, I'm out another. Probably they told me if not, they'll fix it. It'll be less than buying a new one, but still a couple of $100. Get it fixed if it's not warranty. But we'll see.
It's a heck of a way to learn. Yikes.
Dude, what a lesson, I tell you.
Yeah. I had a buddy back in the day when I had a crossbow. I had a buddy dry fire my crossbow and same thing, just tore it to pieces. It was in like 6 pieces after he was done. I was like, what did you do? And he tried to tell me that he was unloading the arrow and shooting at the ground. I was like, no, you weren't, because it would have been fine. He's like, well, yeah, there was no arrow in there. I was like, well, yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. And it's the funniest thing. Like, before I got into it, just like fishing, I watched a ton of YouTube videos and none of it mentioned. Even the guys, I told them, like, hey, I'm brand new to this. This is my first compound bow. Kind of lesson to anybody out there that is in archery. If you have a buddy that's getting into bow hunting or compound bows, tell them that this. Nobody told me. A buddy of mine that does bow hunt, not bow hunting, but does have own a compound bow. It's like, did you tell the story this? Like, you're new to this? Say, yeah, I told him it's my first bow. He's like, they never told you that you should do that? Like, no.
Yeah, that should be like one of the top 5 things you tell someone when they first pick up a bow for the first time ever. Do not do anything unless there is an arrow knocked in it.
Yeah. It is still my fault. I'm not blaming anybody else for it. So.
Yeah. What a bummer.
Let's move on to happier subjects. By the way, do you bow hunting?
Yeah. I haven't gone out this year at all. Like, because I only hunt public, and our public land around here has been just absolutely decimated, like, since COVID. I mean, 3,000 times more people than there were before out in the woods now. And like, you can't get away from anybody. All these spots I used to have, like, you know, you can go way back and get half a mile from the nearest person, or, you know, a mile sometimes from the nearest person. Now there's people every, seems like 50 yards. Like, and then you'll go in the woods, you'll get up at 3 a.m., play your wind right, get in the right position, everything. And then as soon as shooting light comes around, Elmer Fudd and his, you know, dog walk right in and mess everything up, and they're shooting squirrels and trees and stuff. You're like, what are we doing here? So yeah, I haven't been out at all this year.
Yeah, especially in Texas, it's kind of tough. It's already over, but there's 1% of Texas is public land. So I went to fish on, almost said the name of the lake, and I promised the person who told me the lake, do not ever mention this lake. But anyways, I went to a lake, and near it, there's some public land, and do it on a weekend, it's like there's more people out hunting than there are fishing. And you can hear the gunshots, like, I'm like,
You couldn't pay me to go out during gun season around here. Not a chance. No. Luckily, we have like 1 week of gun season and then another weekend for gun, and that's it. And then the rest of the time for like a couple months is all bow. So at least you get that to yourself. But even if it's not gun deer season, there's still like squirrel and, you know, waterfowl and stuff like that that are in season. So there's still guns going off everywhere.
Before we get started on our subjects, a couple of shout outs here to everybody that's watching. By the way, if you're watching, let us know where you're watching from. If you listen to the podcast on our MP3 formats on the reruns, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It does really appreciate it. We do really appreciate it. It does help out the podcast. And let's see what we got. We got Wolf of Walmart, my buddy Duke. No, nobody's going to troll on you, dude. Duke, is this your first time on the internet? Mike M. Hi, Drew. Got you. Groupies here.
Mike.
And your boy. And Mike
Dave.
M. Glad you're okay. Thank you, Mike. I do appreciate it. Albert Rock. Good evening, gentlemen. Two of my favorite podcast collaborations.
Hey. Great. Thank you, Albert.
Mike, I know someone who was dry, dry firing during a gun and accidentally had a magazine with the first one in it in the area. He was practicing at least, had accidentally shot off a round. Not great. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, that's not, that's even worse. But yeah, it happens. Anyways, let's get on with our subject for today. I wanted to talk about, in credit to Pete from My Chaotic Fishing, we were at the boat show here in Fun Zone Tackle in Hearst, Texas. And G-Man was doing his TED Talk. I don't know. Have you ever seen, I don't know. This is the first time I hear G-Man. I don't know if they save some of the stuff or, you know, for like when they get really paid, like Bass University, stuff like that. I thought I was going to get like a seminar on how to throw a specific bait or how to. He's more of a tech talk, positive mental attitude, kind of stand-up comedy, which, by the way, it's funny. The guy has a great personality, but I was like, yeah, this is not what I expected. I'm not saying, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying that's usually not what I expect when I hear somebody talk about bass fishing in a seminar. His was more about, you know, making, getting your goals into social media and competitively, but not diving into anything specific. Have you ever heard a G-Man talk? Is that always how he talks?
So, yeah, a little bit, but it's also, I think there's a difference, you sort of hinted at it, a difference between an appearance that might technically have like a seminar or something attached to it versus like a Bass U, because you're right. When they do something like Bass U, they prep for it. They know their topic. They actually, like, you know, outline stuff and do the research. Even at like some local expos, you're going to see these guys get up, and not G-Man in particular, just the pros in general. Like, they get up there and it's a little bit more wing it. It's a little bit more like, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, answer some crowd questions, go over, you know, a tactic really loosely, and then move on and take some pictures and that kind of stuff. And we see that at expos a lot too. I'll never forget the first time, I won't say his name, but there was a gentleman that is still fishing today, big name. I saw him for the first time at an expo and I was so pumped. Same thing as you were. I was like, I'm going to learn. This is going to be great. And he got up there and you could tell he did not prep one bit, had nothing to talk about, and just mailed it in up there for like 5 or 10 minutes, took some crowd questions and left. And I was like, that was really disappointing. Like, that was not what I was looking forward to. So yeah, you get that a lot of times, especially at boat shows and even fishing expos too. It's more of a go see the guy, get your picture, get an autograph, hear him talk for a couple minutes, but you're not going to get like the juice at those things.
Yeah, definitely not. But yeah. Pete from My Chaotic Fishing, like I mentioned, did post an interesting question to G-Man. I was kind of surprised at G-Man's response. I guess, not criticizing. G-Man is an expert on this subject. But he asked what his thoughts were on the forward-facing sonar bait, the rebranding of forward-facing sonar baits. And then G-Man said, you know, this is true. There's a lot of companies that just jump in on this bandwagon and, you know, and trying to get their baits out there to sell with have nothing to do with forward facing sonar. But he also talked about how there are some baits that are specific for forward facing sonar. And perfect timing, I got you into this podcast, not only because of your great knowledge in tackle, as you know, the name for your podcast suggests, but also you just came from me, kind of like a media event for Berkeley in Houston. So you got to hear about some of the new baits that are developing that are kind of forward-facing sonar. Before we dive into the baits, I think it's important to understand how a forward-facing sonar works. We know what it does, but I think a lot of people, yours included, don't know exactly the nuances of how it works. For example, forward-facing sonar, and I'll lead you explain the meat and potatoes of it, but just kind of introduction, it's not like infrared, right, cameras, right, where they detect heat versus cold. If this is more of a sonar, just like a bat, like that's flying and looking for insects, it's the same premise. It's sound, and then the echo that you get back from that sound creates this image of what's in front of you or around you. I'll let you explain it a little bit more because I'm, like I said, you're smarter than me at this.
No, it's just forward facing. It's the same like technology that we've had for a while on like side imaging, down imaging, all that kind of stuff. It's just orienting the information that's giving back to you in a different way. So like side imaging, when you're going down to the boat, side imaging is shooting that, you know, to the right and to the left of your boat. And the same thing, it's shooting it out. It's bouncing off of any sort of structure, fish or the bottom, and it bounces right back up to the boat. And then it paints this like almost a 2D picture on either side of your boat of what's going by on the right and to the left. And now forward facing basically takes a very similar signal, I guess, but it shoots it straight out in front of your boat or wherever you're pointing your little transducer. And your transducer has a cone. So like if my boat is right here and I'm shooting out in front, it has this cone that goes like this and it's right in front of your boat. So it can see what's directly in front of you and then it'll bounce back and you can see kind of in live time sort of what's just in that direction. And it'll piece all that information together. So anything that's in that cone will show up on this 2D graph. So you can't really tell, you know, if you're looking straight ahead and that cone's at, I don't know, whatever they are, 18 degrees or whatever, that it shoots out. If something is over here or something's over here, as long as it's in that cone, it's showing up as it's in front of you. So there are some nuances that I don't think forward facing really takes into account, but it's close, right? You can get your cast in the right direction. And then when that fish, you know, or something comes toward your bait on the 2D graph, it still looks like it's coming directly at your bait, even though it might be coming a little bit from the right or to the left. But yeah, it's shooting back in real time. And it's something that like we've had the capability of having real time fish marking for a long time. Like you've had, you know, we just finished ice season here. You have a Vexlar. I'm sure when that came out, people freaked out because it's this circle graph, right? And you have these little dots on it, but you can see your jig in real time and you can see a fish, you know, another dot come up from the bottom. And it's like playing fish Atari where you see the two meet and then you set the hook and the fish is right there. So we've had the ability to see live, you know, imaging back to you. Now we're just seeing it in a clearer picture because it's putting it in front of you in a way that looks a lot more like what we're used to seeing, almost like a 2D scroller video game or something versus these little cryptic dots that you have to like try and fish for. But yeah, forward facing sonar is basically, it's probably one of the most polarizing things out there right now because I still think a lot of people don't understand how it works, how hard it probably is to master. I've had it for about 6 months and I'll be honest, I've used it like 10 times because most of the fishing that I do is in the river. It does nothing for you in the river. It is the most worthless piece of equipment I've ever bought for river fishing because we fish 5, 6, 7 foot at most, you know, rivers around here. And even if you're out there and you're trying to use forward facing, you're just marking, you know, you think you see a bass. It's not a bass. It's a catfish. It's a carp. It's a sucker. We have too many trash fish that outweigh the bass that you're fishing for. And those bass that you're fishing for are hugging the bottom. They're, you know, in eddies, they're behind rocks or everything. They're not these really nice suspended fish that are sitting there somewhere. So it's more, I think, for like the lake guys that are out there fishing really, really deep. And those were fish that weren't really getting, I don't know, they weren't getting targeted that way to start with. So the guys that are using forward facing usually aren't the guys that are over there, you know, whooping your spot on the docks that you've been fishing your whole life, right? They're fishing for different fish out in the center. But I know obviously we're not here to talk about whether it's a good or bad thing. I don't really care. I'm tired of hearing people talk about forward facing in general and, oh, it's ruining the sport or, oh, it's good for the sport. It's you either love it or you hate it. Exactly. It's like politics. It's like your sports teams or whatever you've picked aside and you stick there and that's totally fine.
Exactly. One thing that caught my eye from this, totally unrelated, is how you always seem to amaze me when you say like Fish Atari. I look at you and I'm thinking he'll say PlayStation or Nintendo, but Atari is like, you're stuck in an old man's soul.
Oh yeah, man. Like, yeah.
What is this 17-year-old talking about, Terry?
It's funny. Yeah, dude. No, it's or like the when I was little, like the video game system that I had was the old Nintendo, the first Nintendo. So you'd play like Mario, Duck Hunter, Top Gun, and Tetris, and that was like basically the four games that we had like growing up.
That's what I'm surprised. It's like, how do you not say fishing Nintendo instead of fishing Atari? I would think by that time you were able to play games, Atari was long gone.
Yeah, but it's that type of energy, right? When you look at like a flasher, it's like, oh, it's like a, you just picture these 1980s beep sounds coming out of it. Like, you know, the little handheld games they used to have that you could like play basketball or whatever, but it was just dots and you had to move your dots around, or if it was the baseball game or something. That's what it makes me think of. It's just those old games that used to be able to get at the, you know, the garage sale down the street for like $3.
That is funny. Goodwill and all those stores. Well, another thing that I wanted to add about the forward-facing sonar, it's like we mentioned, it's like echo, whatever technology is like. It creates an image based on the echo. I would like, a lot of, you know, I've said on the podcast before, I was born in Puerto Rico where there was a lot of bats. And one of the things that I used to love when I was like 10 years old, we were like, it was dusk and the bats were coming out. I don't know if anybody else did this. I don't know if you did this, Andrew, but I would have a ton of fun of grabbing little gravel or pebbles, throwing up in the air, and watching the bat come straight at it. Yeah. And at the very last second, it would bounce. Like it would abort mission. And that's the thing that forward-facing sonar does. And I wanted to illustrate this, but it does play a part when we're talking about baits. So that bat, when that echo sounds transmits, like, okay, there's something flying in front of you. In this case, it's a little rock, a little pebble. It'll go at it. As it gets close, he can detect the density, or he can detect that this is a rock and not an insect, even though it's the same size, because the echo sound, this is amazing, by the way.
Nuts.
They can tell because of the density. So a rock is going to be more dense than a dragonfly, right? So right before he decides to attack this little pebble, the image that he creates from his sonar or the echo, it's telling me this is more dense. This is not an insect. This is not part of your food chain. Do not eat it. Do not attack it. Forward-facing sonar does the same thing. And if you don't use forward-facing sonars, think about down scan or side scan. When you see a hard structure below you on the side of you, those tend to show brightest. And when you have grass or, you know, debris, soft debris, like maybe it's fall and you get a lot of like, you know, junk like leaves and grass that are dying off, those tend to show less bright or, you know, more opaque. And that's where you distinguish, okay, this is a grassy or sandy bottom, and if it's brighter, you can tell like, okay, this is a hard rock bottom.
Yeah.
I say that because that comes into play when we're talking about forward-facing sonar, again, branded as baits. Now that we got that clear, anything else you want to add? Or if anybody that's watching has a question about that, feel free to put it on the comments. We'll try to do our best to get it answered. Anything else that we missed on the
sonar? Kayak guys, forward-facing sonar to me sucks, like in general. If you've never tried to use forward-facing on a kayak, it's one thing to be on a boat, I guess. I learned this when I was down in Houston. I got to be on Justin Atkins' boat, where you got two big power poles. You power pole down, and you can sit there, and your boat doesn't move.
Yeah.
And so it stays the exact same spot, face the exact same way. If it was even just one power pole, you would turn a little bit with the wind and stuff. Two power poles keep you at the exact same spot. So if I put that, you know, cone straight out in front of me, it stays there and it doesn't move. In a kayak, there's so many micro movements that are happening with you while you're out there on the water, whether it's current, whether it's wind, whether it's just a kayak on water is not going to sit still even on the calmest day.
Yep.
And you learn that really fast when you're trying to, you know, get a sonar cone pointed one direction. And so you got like one hand on the paddle, one hand on the transducer trying to move it. You got the rod in one hand. Like, you just, it doesn't set up as well as it does in a boat. So for us kayak folks, like, I think it's very underestimated how hard it is to use forward-facing sonar correctly because of all of the nuances to being in a kayak that you don't have to face in a boat.
Even like if you throw a crankbait, even the pull that a crankbait does will turn your kayak around. I have a PA-14, and if I'm just throwing a crankbait to my side, it'll pivot that kayak, even 14-foot. PA-14, it's gonna pivot it. So you're gonna have to reel it while you adjust your forward-facing sonar. To me, if I'm have a forward-facing sonar, and at some point I guess I'll get it, I'm going to have to get a spot lock with some type of troll motor where it could hold my spot. Otherwise, I don't see the benefit of it. I was talking to Gerald Smith, which he's on the comment section right now. He doesn't really use it to see the fish react to its bait. It's more to locate the fish. Once he locates the fish, kind of stops using the forward-facing sonar and focuses on you know, I found him, now let me just throw something there.
Yeah.
So it's more complicated than a kayak. It's not as easy. Hats off to Ewing Miner, who is an absolute hammer when it comes to national trails. Using forward-facing sonar, how he does it, I don't know. It's part of that new generation, I guess, that are just very, you know, their thought mind is very trained to it. One thing that Gerald Swindle said on that seminar in the Q&A was like, I actually asked that question. I asked him, like, do you think that now, in especially in the elite, is more about who's a better gamer than who's a better fisherman? And he said, we're already there.
Yeah.
And one of the things he mentioned is like him being kind of the same age that I am. It's like, I didn't, you know, he says, like, I am, my mind is not in tune to stare at a screen. So it's not just knowing how to use it. It's training yourself to stop looking at the coastline, stop looking at the water, and start looking at a monitor at your feet for 8 hours. And I never thought of that. It's like, if you've been fishing for like himself for like 3 decades, and you're used to just looking out and watching what nature is, where the birds are, where you see a splash of water, how the current is moving, and now you're just staring at a screen in your feet.
Yeah.
That younger generation knows how to stare at a screen more. And I'm not taking a shot at anybody, but as technology, like I didn't grow up with an iPhone. A cell phone, if I had one, was just for emergency calls. You know, it wasn't like we have now. Like, you have the world at your at the tip of your thumb with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So younger generations are more attuned to that versus older guys like myself. Yeah, we're not used to it, especially if you're doing this for 30 years. But we're going down a rabbit hole. Let's talk about the baits, though. What is your thoughts on it? What baits do you really think? And we don't have to, if you know companies, feel free to shout them out either.
I'm going to say companies.
But which ones do you think like are legit baits that are forward-facing sonar, and what are not, just rebranding? Your thoughts on the rebranding second, and what makes it, what are the components? Because it's not just one component that makes it a forward-facing sonar bait. It could be different aspects. So let's get your thoughts on that first.
So first thing that comes to mind, I think that there's probably 3 categories that I would put forward-facing sonar baits in that are like coming out today. I would say like one is going to be just baits that company X is rebranding as forward-facing sonar baits, and they're just trying to take care of the craze of forward-facing that's out there. And there's no real, you know, changes or innovation or anything. They're just taking baits that already exist and marketing them as forward-facing sonar baits. So I'd say that's probably category number one. I'd say category number two is probably new baits that people are making that are forward-facing sonar baits, but there's nothing about that bait inherently that makes it better for the return on the screen or anything like that. It's just a bait made for a technique that works well with forward-facing sonar. And then I'd say your third category is probably people that are making baits that really are specifically for forward-facing sonar and probably show up better on a screen. And I would say the majority of people are probably doing the first category of just rebranding things that already exist. I'd say there are some people now that are dipping their toes into making new products specifically just for like the techniques that are good for forward-facing. And I don't really see anybody that's making bona fide products that show up noticeably better on screen. Like, you know, Bill Lewis came out with the Scope Stick, I think it was like 2 years ago. It was a jerkbait that they were supposed to be making for forward-facing sonar. it's just a plastic jerkbait that has, you know, a couple knockers in it or whatever. And when you read the marketing, actually, let's do this. Let's pull it up. I want to see if I can pull up the Bill Lewis scope stick because I want to read. I haven't even read this, and I guarantee you
that it'll stand
here. So, like, it says,
this goes into what Three the Hard Way, Gerald Smith, is asking, is bait popper real? And I think that's where you're going with it as well.
Yeah. So like this says with that scope stick, it says expertly designed to enhance the live sonar experience, the Bill Lewis Scope Stick 100FL will practically wave at you on the screen. Constructed with pronounced flattened sides.
Oh my God.
This wider surface area shows up more clearly on forward-facing sonar. You know what always has flat sides for the most part? Jerkbaits. Jerkbaits have sides, pronounced sides on them. And if you look at this jerkbait, it's not a square, right? It's just normal sides of a jerkbait. So that's what you're getting a lot of the forward-facing sonar baits. You're getting people that are accentuating little pieces of a jerkbait. Like it says in here, where's it at? And I just saw it a second ago. It relies on a specialized bill that imparts a lively side-to-side darting action that not only generates a feeding response in predators, but also helps ensure your bait's side spends more time facing the sonar unit to increase visibility. All jerkbaits do that. All jerkbaits go back and forth. That's what a jerkbait does. So, of course, it's going to go bam, and then the side is going to be faced, you know, your unit. Boom. The side's going to be faced your unit. Every jerkbait does that. So it's just a lot of marketing speak and mumbo jumbo and people trying to, you know, put lipstick on a pig and say, hey, this is a a feature that all jerkbaits have, but ours, you know, it's specifically for forward-facing sonar. It's like, all right, whatever. So that's like – I think most people are in that first category. I think if you look back, one of the very first baits that I ever remember being marketed as a forward-facing sonar bait was Yum. And they came out with the forward-facing sonar jig and then the forward-facing sonar minnow. And it's just – the jig is literally a ball head jig. Just a ball head jig. It's just a regular 90-degree line tie, ball head jig, sickle hook. Like, there's nothing special about it. There's 30 different variations of that out there on the market that have been out for 20 years. But they marketed it as a forward-facing sonar jig head. And then the minnow was the same thing, just a little straight tail minnow that you could use for like a Damiki rig or Strollin or something. And so when people looked at that, I think they were like, yeah, I guess technically you can use it for forward-facing, and it is a jig head and a soft plastic that people are using a lot of times for these techniques that they're throwing out in front of the bait, the boat, and kind of working back. So yeah, I guess it's a forward facing bait, but it's just marketing is all it is. And then, you know, I went down to Houston a couple weeks ago, and you're starting to see companies like Berkeley and other people come out with baits that they're marketing as like forward facing optimized baits. The interesting part about that is you can make the argument that someone like Berkeley, who just came out with that upside down jerkbait, the Kredge, is like, at least they designed something that I've never had in my box before.
Nobody has ever developed before.
Well, it's like, well, it's just something
finally,
that is
what different. We asked for.
Yeah, right. Something different at least. And it's got, I think I got one over here. Yeah. So like, you know, it's got the weird upside down bill deal going there, but it falls. So like when you work this thing up and you pull it up toward your boat, it falls back this way. So it goes up and then falls back and goes up and falls back. And that tail kind of like backslides or whatever. So at least you can make the argument. That's an interesting action that we don't see a lot of times out of these baits. And it makes sense for forward facing because you're not really working this like a jerk bait where it's going bam, 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 bam all over the place and it can leave your cone. It's very much a sort of straight retrieve type bait where you reel it up, let it fall, reel it up, let it fall. So it's going in a straight line. So it's staying really nice and simple in that cone. And I think that's what you're seeing a lot of times with these forward facing baits now too. Again, it's just people trying to make something that will play nice with a slim cone in front of your boat. And then, you know, the guy asked about bait pop. That's like the third category where people are at least trying or claiming that they're making products that are going to show up better on your screen. I haven't seen anything on bait pop that makes me think that it's the magic juice for forward facing or whatever. I just think, yeah, it's probably got some, you know, metal flakes or something in it that helps, but I don't know. It's not like you're going to not see your jig head, put bait pop on it, and then it's going to be like, oh, it's going to be able to be seen from 50 feet away. So I don't know. I think that's just kind of like the 30,000 foot view of the landscape of forward facing baits right now.
Yeah. And I think what Gerald is referring to, Gerald Smith, his namesake, Gerald Swindle, Gerald Smith was there too as well when Gerald, now I got the Gerald's confused. When Gerald Swindle was talking, Gerald Smith was there with me as well. And one thing that he talked about was, you know, that bait pop. And I think he referred to like there might be some crankbaits now. And again, you're the expert on tackle, that instead of them doing maybe a lead bead, because if you think about it, you know, why would you spend more money on a tungsten bead on a crankbait? Right. Nobody's going to see it. Nobody cares. But now with forward facing sonar, tungsten, because of the density, tends to shine brighter. I'm not referring to the Rihanna song, but it does shine brighter, right? So the thought is, if now my crankbaits have tungsten beads instead of lead beads, that crankbait is gonna shine brighter again. Do you think that's real? And that's even worth it? Like, is it that big of a difference? Like, oh, I've never got to see my crankbait until now, thanks to those tungsten beads.
Yeah. The interesting part about crankbaits too is, at least for me, I'm not going to use forward facing sonar while I'm cranking. Like, cranking is one of those things I'm smashing bottom and I'm moving so fast. Like, I think forward facing probably is a benefit when you're actually doing a technique where you can watch that fish be drawn in and you're trying to entice that fish. So you're trying to decide, do I want to give it a quick snap here and try and get this fish to commit? Do I need to go lower? Do I need to go higher? What do I do to keep enticing this fish or draw this fish in from, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 feet away that I see on my graph? Cranking, like, I'm probably not even using forward facing ever really with crankbait, but with something like a jerkbait is a good example too. Like a jerkbait that you're trying to keep and sit there and work, you know, give it three twitches and sit there, and you're watching the fish follow it, and you're watching it, you know, get a little closer, give it another twitch, let it sit there, let that fish come nose on it, give it a twitch again. Like, I would think, to me, if I have a 100 or 110 size jerkbait or whatever, it's got three trebles on it. So there's metal. It's got a 110 millimeter body made of plastic that should be pretty easy for that sonar to pick up. And it's already got, you know, lead in it for the weight transfer thing. So I don't think switching out two little lead BBs for two tungsten lead BBs is really going to make a giant difference on that bait when it has so much else going on. You should be able to see that bait pretty well. I would probably make the argument it's more on your, you know, settings, or, you know, getting your unit dialed in if you can't see a 110 size jerkbait on your forward facing and you need extra tungsten in there to make it show up or something. But that's just me.
We have a comment here by Mike M. He says, seems very unnatural to understand the idea. I just wonder how much you will get bait. I think he's talking about, what's the name of that bait from Berkeley, Kredge?
Oh, the Kredge. Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, time's going to tell on this one, right? It's something that's new. It looks good in a tank, but you can show me almost anything look good in a tank, right? It's just a matter of, is it going to get bit? I think on the fall, this thing probably will get bit. Like, I was talking to, when I was down there, I was like, I'm probably not even going to fish this the way that they're saying it's supposed to be fished. I'm going to fish it like right now as we're getting out of winter in this cold water when I would normally be throwing a blade bait. And I'm, you know, trying to capitalize on that sort of vertical presentation or whatever. Like, I could see this being nice because it's going to fall slower than a, you know, big, heavy blade bait will, so I get more time on the fall for this thing just to kind of shimmy down, and I can rip it up, let it shimmy down again, versus a blade bait where I'm ripping it up and the shimmy nice is on the up and then it just kind of like falls straight down. So it's almost like the opposite of what I'd be using a blade bait for. But I don't know if it's going to work or not. I haven't caught any fish on it yet. I haven't, you know, gone out and really tried to put it through the ringer, but at least it is different than something that I currently have in my box, so I'll at least give them thumbs up and kudos for something different that I get to try.
I wanted to touch on that. And please, if you, I know when, you know, when we're talking about social media podcasts, you know, we would like, you know, sponsorship to help pay for the cost. And I don't want to put you in a situation where you have to decide, do I really want to be honest about this and cost myself a sponsorship? But I'll ask. Now, it's in first perception I got about the Kredge is like, what do we call it? The bait that we're talking about.
Yeah.
We saw the backlash that Berkeley has gotten lately. with the Nessie and with social media content creators just bashing them. And I felt like, you know what? This new bait feels like their answer to, like, we don't know if this is going to catch fish or not. We just need to put a bait out there that nobody has ever put out. And somebody said, why don't we do an upside down jerk bait? I'm like, yes, let's do that. That is going to be unique because nobody had thought of it. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, because it probably is a bad idea. Your honest opinion. Now, you were with Burke with that seminar in Houston that Berkeley did. And it was, you know, to kind of like explain to media, you know, the new baits and the development and all that. And I wanted to get your honest opinion. Do you really think that this is just them reaching, trying to kind of like change the narrative or their name? Or do you really think that they truly believe that this bait is going to be a great bait?
I think it's a little bit of both. I know that's a wishy-washy answer, but I see both sides of this. I can tell you they did put a ton of time into this. Like, I know the people over there well enough, or have got to at least talk to them and really feel them out. And I'm a pretty good judge of character, I think, in terms of when someone's bull crapping me and someone's not. Like, I've talked to enough people doing the show and everything that you can start to see through people pretty quickly. Like, I don't think there's a company out there bait wise, especially like here in America, that's putting the time into the R&D that they are. They have a whole facility out in Spirit Lake, Iowa, that's got like, you know, tens of thousands of gallons of tanks out there. They're super secretive about it. They don't let people out there, but they have like some of the most tenured fish biologists in the bait development game out there working on stuff at Spirit Lake, Iowa. And I know they go through a lot of ideas that just get thrown in the trash. And I've talked to people like Mark and John and people over there, and it's like, yep, we really tried to make this thing happen and it's not going to happen. Throw it away, take it out behind the barn, shoot it, and let's start with something new. And so this is one of those things that, at least when I first saw it and I looked at it, they like did the whole reveal on the screen thing and they showed it, and I was like, what is this? Like, what is an upside down bill jerkbait gonna do? And then I saw it in the tank, and in the tank, some of the ways that they're working it, I'm probably not gonna use it. I'm not gonna use this on top of the water, you know, skittering it like a little topwater or something. Like, that was one of the ways that they could use it. You can go out there and work it like a regular jerkbait. I'm not going to work it like a regular jerkbait because it's way too erratic and doesn't do what I want it to do as a normal jerkbait. I think the only thing that this could have staying power in is a like dive and rise type bait, where you're just kind of popping it up and letting that sucker fall back, popping it up and letting that sucker fall back. And it's a look that these fish haven't seen before, at least, or at least around me, because I haven't been thrown anything like this. And then when you have the forward facing guys that are able to see fish chasing something, the benefit that they were kind of spinning on this was, when you work it away from a fish, it falls back right back in that fish's face, like, because it slides back where it came from. So if you have a fish that's kind of following and just sort of moseying behind it and you rip it up, it does at least slide back that direction. I don't know. I haven't put enough time in it, but I do think there was also a part of Berkeley that was like, yeah, take this and shove it, right? Like, you guys are out there always complaining that all we do is take ideas that are out there. Here's this one. And then you saw the internet reach hard. Like, you had the people that were just like, that's a jackal riser. It's like, have you ever seen a jackal riser?
I don't even know what a jackal riser is.
They're nowhere near the same bait, but it was just people. They sit there and they foam at the mouth and they wait for the company that they hate to release something so that they can just dunk on them on social media somewhere. And this was one where you saw really fast. It was like, they could put out whatever they want tomorrow and people are gonna try and find something to say that it's a knockoff of, because they have that reputation now. And so, like, a jackal riser is a really small, it's like probably almost half the size of this thing, and it's a topwater bait. It's literally a bait that's made to be fished on top. It doesn't really sink that well. It does have a bill that's not like, if the bill is normally, you know, if this is straight, it's probably like that, so it's just a little up. This thing's got a bill like that. So they're not even close to the same bill angle. The riser's made out of metal. It's got a little hole poked in it, and that's where you tie it off. This is more of like a jerkbait bill. This one obviously is a sinking, falling bait, not a topwater. So you just saw really fast, like, people are in their little silos, and if they hate someone like Berkeley, or we saw it with Rapala not too long ago with the Crush City stuff, like, people are just gonna, they like sit there and wait, and they're like, I can't wait to pounce on these companies when they come out with something.
Never understood that fan base. Like, I kind of get it for sports. I'm into sports, but not enough to ruin my day or make my life that more enjoyable. Like, I love watching my team win, and I hate to see them lose, but that's not going to change my day. My day is not going to be based on whether my team won or lost.
Right.
It's even more ridiculous when it comes to, like, bait companies. They're all trying to make money. Nobody's doing creating baits out of the goodness of their heart so you can actually get bigger or more fish. It's all money. Just people go different ways about getting money. I don't agree with that. Being said, I obviously don't agree with you know, some of the things that the tactics that some of the companies do. And I do applaud other companies, like I mentioned on the podcast before, like Z-Man, which to me has a great reputation for doing things the right way when it comes to that. That being said, I'm still a consumer. You bring me a good bait that's going to catch me fish at a reasonable price, I'm a fan. I don't care if the next bait you make is crap or it's a copycat, just as long as you don't make me pay more for it. By the way, that's another thing that I wanted to talk about. So I think you touched on it because we've hit a lot of talking points on this. When we talk about swim baits, regarding forward-facing sonar baits, now let's say a glide bait, for example. A glide bait may have this design that goes like really far left, really far right. It has this erratic motion, not erratic, but just this, how do I say this? This large swings from left to right that might come in and out of a forward-facing cone. And a company might say, hey, you know what? We're going to redesign it so it'd be a tighter turn. And then we're going to rebrand it as forward-facing sonar. That, and have you seen an example of that? And what do you think about that?
Yeah. So like it's an interesting concept because when I've used my forward-facing, if I use it, again, I haven't used it very much because I'll probably end up selling it in the next like year or so because I use it so little and it's not for me. But when I'm using it, we fish a lot of shallow water around here. And the shallower water you're in, the tighter that cone is because it doesn't have as much water to shoot out and expand. So if you're in, you know, 6, 7, 8 foot of water, like that cone's pretty tight. And so, yeah, if you're fishing a 7, 9 inch glide bait that goes 4 foot this way and 3 foot this way and whatever, you're giving these big wide turns, it can get out of it pretty quick, especially if you're in a kayak that's moving. Like you said, when you're trying to, you know, keep it as straight as you can. And then you've got a bait that's going like this, your kayak's going like this, your deucer's over here, you're trying to work your rod and it's just trying to keep it in the cone sucks. So yeah, I could definitely see tighter range of motion being something that some of these companies spin as a benefit of forward facing sonar optimized baits. I think it's probably a good example of what this thing is, right? Because again, it's straight up and straight back. So versus something that's going crazy all over the different directions. So yeah, I think straight tactics and straight retrieves are something that you'll see people lean into.
What about soft plastic? And let me share the screen here because this one kind of, you touched on Yum Baits a little while ago. And I actually pulled up, while you were talking about it, can you see the...
Yeah.
Is it displaying? Okay, cool. So Yum Baits has a soft plastic minnow or jerkbait. Soft plastic minnow. Actually, let's look up at the name. Just call it by the name. It is the worst name of this. I have no idea.
It's the sonar minnow, yeah.
Sonar.
Basic right. Sonar minnow, yeah.
So just reading on the description, it says recruited Jason Christie, one of the best professional anglers at using forward-facing sonar to design a soft plastic to squeeze maximum advantage of technology and its relatable techniques. Yum forward-facing sonar minnow delivers a subtle quiver to pay off big bass interest with strike instead of a last-second retreats. That's saying a whole lot of things without saying anything. After 5 years development of the prototype testing and includes Jason Christie's 2022 Bassmaster Classic tournament win, forward-facing sonar minnow earns your line time with proven results and ready to heat up the action on local waters. The only thing that I got out of that maybe we can stretch into saying it's forward-facing sonar is the quivering action.
The only thing forward-facing about this bait is the name.
Yeah, exactly. Like
it's what a lot of these are. This was the bait I was talking about at first when they came out with that ball head jig and then the minnow too. The only thing that makes this forward facing is that they say it's forward facing. There are hundreds of straight tail minnows out there, flukes, and you know, the new Crush City Freeloader just came out as a similar body type to that type of thing, right? And those aren't marketed as forward facing sonar baits, they're just regular baits. Like, yeah, Mike, good point. It's just a Dimiki rig bait. So anything that's a Dimiki rig bait, I guess, yeah, if we're going to start calling that a forward-facing bait, then call it a forward-facing bait. But we talked about this before we started, Armando, is that I think it's really dumb for someone like Yum to call that bait what they just called it, because they alienate 98% of people that could buy that bait, because they look at it and they say, oh, forward-facing bait. Well, then that one's not for me. I'm going to go somewhere else. The guys and girls that own a forward facing unit are in the top 1% of people who bass fish, and those people don't need that bait marketed to them as a forward facing bait. They know what they're doing. They know what techniques they're going to throw with forward facing sonar off the front of their boat or whatever. They don't need word salad, you know, Yum over here to give them the spin on why this is a bait they can use with forward facing. They know it. They're in the top 1% of bass anglers, and they're spending $5,000 on units. They don't need the marketing to tell them what baits are forward facing, which ones aren't.
That, go ahead. I thought I interrupted you for a second there.
No, I'm done.
So that's a great point, because I think, you know, I get the craze, but like, how the percentage of anglers out there that use forward facing sonar, what is it? Like you just mentioned, it's very few. I'm not gonna make up a number. I don't
know many
percentage, but I'm gonna say less than 10%. Just I'm trying to be err on the side of Yum in this case. But even if it was just 10%, like, it's not gonna be translatable to everybody, that the bank fisherman, the kayak fisherman, the one that's fishing from a Yumbo, from a young, oh my God, I can't. This is what happens when you work 8 hours and then you have to come to a podcast.
Yep.
When you fish from a Jumbo, like, you're going to, if somebody's buying Yum baits, which, by the way, shout out to them. I mean, it's $349. I'm looking at the price, $349. Yeah. That's what people love about Yum baits, is they're super inexpensive. Trust me, somebody's just spending $349 on a bait. They probably don't have a forward facing sonar. So why try to get, you know, why annihilate your, really, your customer base, which we all get. It's not your customer base in Yum, for example, it's not the high end crowd. The high end crowd, and this applies to any industry or every community, if they have the money, they say, well, I'm going to spend it on a jackhammer that's $15 or a Yamamoto Sako that's $8 a pack or whatever. They're not going to spend it on a bait that's $349. So I don't get why Yum would do that. It's just there are trends and there are trends. There are trends that translate into everyone in the bass fishing community. And I get why any company would go ahead and do that. You know, they're like, hey, this applies to everybody that's bass fishing. Let's jump on this trend.
Yeah.
This does not apply to 90% of the bass fishing community. So why go that route? I don't know if they raise the price. I'm assuming no, $349 is pretty cheap. Yeah. I would really think that any company out there that's going to put a higher price on the same bait just because they rebranded it as forward-facing sonar, with low truth to be told, is just the same exact bait that it was before forward-facing sonar, or whatever upgrades you did have no translation into being a better forward-facing sonar bait, then you're just annihilating your customer base. Like, there's no reason for you to raise the price on that.
It's like, it's a lose-lose for them, because if you market it as a forward-facing bait, the guys that use forward-facing don't fall for that, so they're not buying it. And if you put forward-facing on it, the guys that don't have forward-facing aren't buying it either, because they look at it and they see the marketing like, well, that's obviously not for me. That's a forward-facing bait. Like, at the end of the day, all of these baits are baits. The Yum, you know, straight tail minnow that you just pulled up, like, that's just a bait. Anybody can throw that. The guy that, you know, bank fishes a 2-foot creek that never even had a, you know, a down scan, let alone forward facing, can use that bait. But instead, the marketing people at the round table at this giant company said, you know what we need to do? Forward facing sonar is a new hip thing. Let's slap that on there. And then they shoot themselves in the foot with this product that should have a much wider appeal, but doesn't.
Another thing that Gerald Swindle had mentioned is you know, a lot that they are some soft plastic companies out there like Yum, that what they're doing is they're making their soft plastic more denser.
Yeah.
Because then it'll show up better on a forward-facing sonar. I have two questions about that. First of all, how big of a difference is, like, can you not see if you're, let's say you drop shot in middle, right? Because that's more of a standstill.
Yeah.
If you're drop shot, shotting a, I'm going to, Bastrix, one of my favorite soft plastics for drop shot. So middle, it's hollow. I'm assuming, never use forward-facing sonar, but I'm assuming that's not going to show up in a forward-facing sonar as much as a soft plastic metal that is more denser. The plastic is more denser. My question is, am I not able to see this Bastrix hollow body soft plastic bait on my forward-facing sonar at all? And therefore, I need to switch it to a hot, denser soft plastic?
Yeah, so you should be able to see it regardless, exactly. Because again, it's still bouncing off of it. So like when it hits that Bastrix minnow, even though it's hollow inside, it's still a solid being like in the water. Yeah. So it's going to hit it and bounce off. So you should still get a return off that. Now, things that are denser, should you get a better return off? Theoretically, yes. Again, I don't know how much difference a hollow soft plastic versus, oh, we made this soft plastic 20% denser inside. Like, yes, there's going to be a difference between soft plastic and lead or soft plastic and tungsten. I don't know how much difference there's going to be between just different variations of thickness of soft plastic, especially in something like a drop shot when you have such a little profile anyway. So I don't know. I'd be interested to see that too, but I don't envision it going from invisible to now it's lit up like a Christmas tree and it's super easy to see.
The other aspect of it is, like, for example, Yamamoto. One of the reasons why the Senko is so popular, and regardless if you feel like you should pay for that or for a Yum Dinger, the Yamamoto soft plastic, the chemical compounds, the way they, you know, mix the chemicals and, you know, the design has a more noticeable action and therefore translate into more bites. Let's say Yamamoto, which I think is Shimano now, decides, hey, we're going to change the compound of the Senko. So it's denser, and now it'll show up a forward-facing sonar. This is just an example. I'm not saying they're doing that. Well, I want to use Senko because that's the most popular ones that we know that their chemical mixture makes a difference, even though it's the same design as a Yum Dinger. But the now you're taking what is your calling card as the greatest soft plastic bait out there and changing it just for forward-facing sonar. So now it's not going to have the same movement. And again, this is just theoretical, hypothetical example. I'm not saying that's what's going on, but apparently there are some companies that are exploring that. If your soft plastic has a great action, you're going to sacrifice that action just to make it denser, and now it falls like a dead stick where it may not attract finicky bass because it doesn't have that little nuances in its movement. Just so it'll show up on a forward-facing sonar, then what's the point?
Yeah, if you were Yamamoto in that situation, the smart thing would be to make both of them and then let the market tell you that it's a bad idea or a good idea. So like if they make this little, you know, the scope Senko or something, and it's like, oh, it's for live scope and it shows up better. And then they pull it out and they put it on the market. And after 3 months, no one's buying them because they suck and the action's terrible. And they show up just as well as a regular Senko does on, you know, their live scope unit. Then people aren't going to buy them and they're going to stop making them. And they'll end up at your, you know, 50 cents a bag discount bin at the Dick's Sporting Goods down the street. But yeah, that's the beautiful part about it being a marketplace, right, is that these ideas get flushed out. They can bring them out. They can have us look at them. And then within a year or so, I guarantee they'll be able to tell whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, whether it needs to stick around or whether that was dumb and we should pull this off the shelves and try something new. But yeah, don't replace your bread and butter great products with this is what used to grind my gears about, like when Berkeley switched the Havoc pit bosses to all power bait and that kind of stuff. It's like, why couldn't you have given us both and let the market choose which one they wanted? But instead they did away with this old fan favorite of the Havoc pit bosses, and now they're all power bait. And now Havoc pit bosses, if you can find them, sell for like $10 a pack because people want the old ones. So that's probably a lesson to all the people out there in the bait world. It's like, if you're gonna change something, leave them both on the market for a while and see which one sells and which one doesn't before you make a change that's like permanent.
Yeah. And I think a lot of companies are catching on that. Well,
yeah,
in conclusion, on your opinion, like forward facing sonar baits, is this a gimmick designed to catch anglers, or do you think there's some truth?
I would say probably 80%+ of it is just marketing. Like, we sat there and read, you know, the marketing speak of two of these, and we both like rolled our eyes and almost threw up with just listening to what they were trying to spin to us. Like, that's what the forward facing stuff is in a nutshell, because at the end of the day, they're all baits. So either it's a good bait and it has good action and it catches fish, or it's a bad bait and it sucks and it doesn't catch as many fish as the other options in my box, and I'm not going to buy them. So yeah, I think they've put this, they've slapped this name on the boxes to try and sell more products because it's the hot thing right now. But ironically, I think they're going to end up selling less because, like we talked about 10 or 15 minutes ago, you're alienating 97% of the population that could be buying your baits by slapping Ford Fakes and Sonar on it. So yeah, I think the majority of it is just marketing, and people just need to look at these as baits in general and not baits for a certain, to be used with a certain technology.
And my kind of like in conclusion to this or comment is, like, as a company, if you want to do that, that's fine. I get it. It's marketing. But if you're going to raise the price on it just because you rebranded it while you did nothing to change the dynamic of your bait to make it forward-facing sonar friendly, that I think it's that I have a problem with. Do what marketing what you want to do, but don't try to, you know, make me charge before it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I was like,
if you do have a bait that you've designed specifically for facing sonar, it does make a difference on how you see it on your forward facing sonar, and it costs more to make that. I understand.
Yeah. And it's like this little thing. Like, I liked this because it was a different action of something that I didn't have in my box. And it was specifically because of it as a bait and not because of using it with forward facing. Like, every one of these forward facing baits that comes out, I'm just judging them on, do I like them as a regular bait or not? And I think that's what people should do. Like, just put that part of it aside for a second, judge it independently as a regular bass bait. So does it have good action? Does it have good hardware? Is it made with quality? Does it have, you know, a tendency to roll on itself? And then, okay, well, this thing sucks. Like, that's the one thing that I always look for in baits is consistency of action. And so I think that's how you can tell a lot of times a good bait from a poorly made bait. So yeah, I think the forward facing stuff, you just kind of have to set aside the forward facing label on the front and just look at them as lures.
Yep. I agree. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to come up to the podcast and educate our minds into forward facing sonar baits. I really appreciate it. And I say that truthfully. I wanted to give you a couple of minutes or whatever, however much time you want to take, but to plug in your social media. Where can people follow you, listen on your podcast? What can people expect from your podcast? Any news on your podcast and social media? And shout out to any sponsors, of course.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. Well, thanks for having me, too. It's always fun to chat. I know we've talked about it before, but it's always fun, like, being on the other side of it, too, where you're not asking the questions and you get the questions asked to you, because I don't get this very often. So, yeah, I'm usually on your side. We just do a show every Tuesday, sort of very similar to this. We just try and break down baits and break down techniques, and we have guests on. And even when we have guests on, we try and learn stuff. We try and poke and prod and get real information out of them. We don't do a lot of the drama. We don't do all that kind of stuff. We just try and stick pretty straight down the middle on like fishing stuff. So yeah, every Tuesday we bring out a new episode. You never know what it can be. A couple weeks ago it was, and this is the fun part, is we get to talk about all the different brands. So a good example was, like, 3 weeks ago we had Jacob Wheeler on to talk about Rapala and Crush City, and then the next weekend we flew down to Houston to talk about Berkeley. And it's like, there aren't very many people that get the chance to do that, because usually you have to pick a lane and go with like a sponsor and that kind of stuff. And we don't do any sort of the rod, reel, line, bait sponsors, because we want to obviously be able to talk about whatever. So we can come on here and talk about how dumb the, you know, description was of the Bill Lewis scope stick, because we don't work with Bill Lewis and we'll never work with Bill Lewis. So it's the same thing. We get to be honest about it, which is fun. But yeah, we try and learn stuff. We got some really cool guests coming up here in the next couple weeks, and really getting into the nerdy side of fishing again, too. So I'm excited for that those are the episodes that I think I have the most fun. It's like having someone on that's smarter than I am and getting to pick their brain and learn. Like, I think it's, there's so much information out there about fishing. Like nowadays we have, you talked about a billion things at the tips of your fingers on the internet. Yep. Yet there's something to be said for sitting down and having a conversation with somebody, because not everything is on the internet, or not everything's as easily found on the internet, or, you know, it just may be something that's never come up before, but you get an hour with someone, you get to pick their brain about, we're going to do one next week about the life cycle of bluegills, because they're one of the best forage sources for bass. So understanding what their tendencies are at certain times of year, and when color changes happen, and when they're most vulnerable, and all that type of thing, again, to try and better understand what we're imitating out there. So we're doing a whole bluegill kind of biology episode, which will be really cool. So that kind of stuff I love, because I'm just a nerd at heart, and I love trying to learn little things that might help me with like a little bit of an advantage out there on the water.
So for those out there listening, watching, take this. If you can only listen to one episode of a podcast a week, please listen to Tackle Talk Podcast. You're going to get a lot, learn a lot more than with him than you
would. You listen to us after you listen to Bass, Kayak, and Beers.
Well, hopefully you have enough time to listen to both. But yes, yeah. No, it's, yeah, honestly, man. And I say this with all due respect to everybody that does podcasts for bass fishing and all that. The level of education and intellectual that is shared on your podcast is awesome. And it really is. Like, I really feel like every time I listen to your podcast, it is one of the most eye-opening, podcasts that I listen to. It's great. It's entertaining. Again, there's a lot of great podcasts out there. But if you really, for those, again, listening or watching, if really interested in getting better at this and acquiring knowledge that's really going to translate into catching more fish, do yourself a favor. Listen to Tackle Talk Podcast. And if you have time, then listen to mine. Or listen to mine where Andrew Hayes is on the podcast. But seriously.
No, this is an order. You have to listen to BKB before you listen to Tackle Talk.
But did you get a chance to shout out your content creators? I mean, your sponsors? My bad.
So yeah, we work with some great partners. So we have American Legacy, who is a tackle shop out of Indiana. They're in Evansville. They're awesome. They just, it's great service. You can call them up. You got questions. They've got fast shipping. They've just been a day one type of person for me. Like, I've ordered from them way before they were a partner on the show. They were one of the first, actually, when I really first got hardcore into fishing, they were one of the first websites I found that ran like legit sales, where it'd be like Black Friday and you look at it and, you know, Bass Pro would have 50 cents off their flannels or whatever, and then you go to American Legacy and they're like,
I bought those
30% off everything, and you're like, this is awesome. So yeah, that was how I found ALF, and they've been great to us and they're awesome partners. So shout out to them. Dakota Lithium Batteries, Arctic Coolers, you know, great gear. And then we have a new one that should be starting here in a couple months too, that we're excited about. So a little teaser there. I can't say who yet.
Interesting. Looking forward to that. Andrew, once again, thank you so much for taking your time, being on the podcast. And again, for all those that are watching or listening, we really appreciate it, taking your time to listen, watch the podcast. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And we're hopefully going to get on the water soon and try to put a little bit more content out there for us. So anyways, if you're out there on the water, please wear your PFDs. It's winter. It's cold. Please, you know, make sure you are warm enough, you know. And hypothermia is a real thing, especially if you're on the water. So wear your PFDs. Take all the necessary precautions, everyone, to just make sure you make it back home to your loved ones. Have a great night, everyone. Peace out.